Hello and welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Sean Delaney. The programme's website is insideed.com, where you can listen to or download podcasts of all previous Inside Education programmes. This week I'm bringing you the final interview that I recorded at the 2016 Annual Conference of the Computers and Education Society of Ireland, or CESI for short, which was held in February last in Dublin City University. Dr. Lee Graves-Wolfe was a keynote speaker at the conference. Lee Graves-Wolfe has worked at all levels of education from primary and post-primary to higher education and further education. She has been a disc jockey, a network administrator and an instructional technologist, and she blogs at leegraveswolfe.com. She is currently a professor of educational technology at Michigan State University, where she is the assistant director of the university's Hub for Innovation in Learning and Technology. When I met up with Lee, I started by asking her to tell me about Michigan State's Hub for Innovation in Learning and Technology.
It's a brand new unit on campus that is centered around reinventing learning at Michigan State, really focusing on students and how they learn and their student experience while they're at Michigan State as a learner. And we're working across campus with faculty, administrators, staff, students, anyone involved, any stakeholder involved in learning at Michigan State, and finding places and spaces to innovate.
So this is for how the university students learn?
Yes.
And Michigan State has a very fine reputation for its education department, the education faculty. Is the Innovation Hub housed in the School of Education, or is it somewhere else?
It's somewhere else. It's housed at the provost level. So it's a university level initiative that works across campus. I came from the College of Education, so there's some expertise from the College of Ed in this initiative. But there are disciplinary-based experts in all the colleges around Michigan State. So we're really utilizing all of our social capital and all of the knowledge that we have on campus and connecting people that are not only researching teaching and learning, but also very deeply invested in the student learning experience and in those conversations. So we're connecting across and within campus.
So presumably some of the faculty are already using technology in their work, and probably some are not. So how do you get a handle on what exactly the current situation is in the university?
One of the things that the Hub is looking at is in gathering people that are involved in conversations about teaching and learning at first, and then technology as another level as well. We're looking at the way people are teaching, not just with technology, expanding the definition of technology. A building can be a technology. Space can be a technology. So we're really trying to push the conception of what it means to learn and be a learner and what it means to be a professor and what it means to teach. So it's sort of really trying to turn on its head the learning experiences. And also we have programs that are already doing it. So we are innovating in spaces and we're amplifying those voices and taking programs that may have never been heard of across campus to other people who are also looking to innovate so we can learn from each other.
So how do you go about doing that? I mean, do you start looking for examples of good practice and then try and spread out from there? Or how do you go about doing that task? Because it's a huge university.
It is. Yep. We're 50,000 students. And I don't know the square miles off the top of my head, but it's quite a large campus. It's a small city. And we have strategically gathered together about seven core people working in the Hub who are connected across campus. So we're really using the networks that we've built internally to start to connect and really change culture. One of the things that we've started is our co-work days. Co-working is a concept that comes from the business world or entrepreneurial world, where if I were, say, here in Dublin, I could just pop into a co-work and have a desk for a day and work around creative people. At Michigan State University, we have that opportunity as well because we're just as large as a city. So we've started creating spaces on campus where people can come and work, and we can create collisions between people that may have never worked together before. So we've started being strategic, maybe working around a theme for those so that we can pull some people together that we know should be in the same room, and then who knows what happens from there. That's one of the ways that we've started doing this.
And could I just pursue that a
sure.
little bit? So the co-working, does that mean that you could have somebody, say, who's teaching in the English department and somebody maybe who's a chemistry professor. Maybe both of those working together. Is that what you mean by this collision or co-working?
Absolutely. So an example of one of our last co-works, our theme was composition, and we happened to have a music faculty in the room, and we had two French teachers, and we had two graduate students from the College of Education. And in talking, the French teachers had some problems of practice that they were kind of struggling with, how to really make this concept come alive for their students and how to engage them. And through conversations with music and the graduate students, they came up with ideas that they never would have come up with on their own, that were interdisciplinary, between using Little Bits, which is a educational technology, and music and French. And it was great.
And presumably all of these people are pretty busy in their own right anyway. Yeah. How do you actually get them to see that, look, this is actually worth doing?
Yeah, that's one of our biggest tasks, is creating that culture where you can take the time to work next to people that you haven't worked with before. You can walk across campus. You can find a new space. The hub itself does not have a physical location at this point, so we're working in spaces across campus trying to model that sort of nomadic nature of building those collisions, and working also with some of the maker spaces on campus. We have about 9 maker spaces, dedicated maker spaces.
Can you say what a maker space
Sure.
is? We did have it on the program before because David Rose spoke about it, but can you just say very briefly what it is?
There's many different definitions of them, and if you go to make.msu.edu, you can see how things are building at Michigan State. But in essence, a makerspace has materials where you can create things. So often there's a 3D printer involved, or some sort of manual thing that you can use, Sharpies and whiteboard markers, a place where you can just come and create that is not like your typical classroom. So there won't be desks, and you can kind of reconfigure things. And those spaces are meant for creativity and
Are they for faculty or for students or for both?
Everyone. Faculty, staff, students.
So anyone can go in there.
Anyone can go
in. It's like a library.
Absolutely. It's in the library, actually, one of them is, which is the perfect space for it. Libraries are the original maker spaces. That's where everyone's a shared resource. And a few of the different colleges on campus have maker spaces that they've opened up to everyone to use. So we're utilizing those spaces and unique. We have a beautiful art museum on campus. It's actually in the Batman versus Superman movie, if you want to watch that. It's called the Broad Art Museum, but they have an open cafe area that's just absolutely gorgeous and has everything that, when you're talking to people about learning spaces, open light and coffee, it's got the perfect sort of environment to create those sort of collisions.
Okay, so you've talked about the co-working, you've talked about the maker spaces. What else is the hub doing to try and get people talking about learning and then seeing how technology can fit with that?
So we're working with specific departments on campus who have come to us for help or wanting to sort of innovate or look at initiatives that they're working on. So we're embedded in about, I'd say about 12 different projects right now. One is potentially reinventing what the veterinary medicine experience looks like for students. A lot of our work is driven by the pressures on higher education in the States right now. Time to degree, cost of degree, how can we reduce those but yet still provide an excellent student experience and education? And to do that, we may need to break and just rethink what education looks like. Would it be competency-based? How does that fit into a large university like Michigan State, where you take a certain number of credits, and how would you do something different in those spaces? So we're strategically working with those departments that have asked for assistance in places, and people will reach out to us as well. So we've run quite a few different design thinking exercises, so people can sort of understand the process that we work in as well, that we're not necessarily coming in with answers. We're searching with them to find the right question, and then once we find a question, how do we design something around that.
And how broad is your remit in terms of, do you have a budget, how many staff do you have, how long is the learning hub going to be in operation or is it indefinite?
That's a question I don't know the answer to on that one in terms of how long it will be. Hopefully for quite a long time, because there's a lot of reinventing that will continually occur. But we have a staff of about 7 core people. And then we also are working with departments, which in and of itself is an innovation, because in a large university like Michigan State, each department and college has their own budget and their own people, so to speak. And we're really working with the colleges, and they're investing people as time and money to get things done. So it's really a unique entity in the fact that campus partners don't pay us to do things. We work with them and help coordinate and utilize their resources better.
And where do you get the ideas from for innovating?
A lot of them come from the colleges and the people themselves. They recognize that they want to do something, and then we run through, we're rooted in design thinking, the design thinking process. So we use that very strategically to help find places of innovation.
And what is that process?
So there's a few different models. It came, originally started from Stanford, the Stanford Design School, and they have a sort of a step-by-step process of how to empathize and know the people that you're working with, the populations that you're designing for, define a problem, and then ideate upon that once you've sort of gotten that down, and then to prototype an idea, and then to test that, and then to do it all over. So it's a constant model. We're sort of like an in-house design firm or consulting firm, where someone would from the outside would come in and do this. We're working on the inside.
But it also sounds like you're studying it and doing research into its effectiveness, presumably.
Absolutely. We have a director of assessment. And so we are very strategically gathering all of the data on what we're doing, in addition to sort of that's on the meta level. And then we're also, as we're working with the departments, gathering data for them. So we're looking at it from all different levels.
So if we move away then from this work a little bit, and how did you come to be doing this work? What was the career trajectory that brought you to this place?
Well, I had been an associate professor in the College of Education in the Master of Arts in Educational Technology program. So my background being in ICT, educational technology integration, it was sort of a natural fit when this position came open. It's a new challenge for me. It's taking me, for the most part, out of the classroom and more in a research administration type of role. It's been a great challenge and a really interesting new place to sort of define a new space in academia as well, which is something the Hub is pretty excited about doing, because there aren't many units like this doing this work. We have found other partners in our consortium and people doing similar work, but it's a new entity in these large-scale institutions.
And how did you get interested in the whole area of technology and education?
That started way, way back when I was in middle school and elementary school, I believe. I really was lucky. My teachers, this was back in the early, mid-80s, so EdTech wasn't, you know, quite everywhere. But my second grade class, we had an Apple II basic computer, and we had a programming, a coding club. So I was coding rocket ships to fly, like letters to go across the screen in basic, and was just really, really lucky in my own schooling to have teachers that just sort of naturally integrated technologies into the classroom. And I was lucky to have a television and radio station in my high school. So that really got me involved in the technology side of things. And so technology's just always been a part of my learning.
And you won a Best Practice Award for Innovation. What was that award for?
That was a couple years ago, the American Colleges of, it's AACTE, American Colleges of something teacher education, awarded our Master of Arts in Educational Technology program the Innovation Award for how we've delivered our coursework online, hybrid, and in our face-to-face program that we run here in Ireland, actually, in the summers. They recognized the way that we've used social media to continue to connect our teachers to each other, and that the learning takes place in our spaces, but it doesn't stop there. That we've really, really worked hard in that program to build a continuing and sustainable community of practice. And I think that's what they they were recognizing us for.
Are these the teachers who are on the program, or are they people who've left the program to keep
both,
them connected?
Yeah. So while they're in the program, the master's program is for practicing teachers. So most of the people are either just starting out their careers, or they could be all the way through. It's any sort of practicing teacher can come to the program. And we use social media to extend and give an authentic audience and voice to the work that they're doing. So it's not just using Twitter. It's that when they're doing assignments, that those are posted out in the public so that other teachers can connect to the work that they're doing. And then, as you mentioned, alumni, they can continue to, as ICT and EdTech changes all the times, they can stay in contact with the MAET program and continue to learn with the assignments that the current students are doing and connecting with them and learning the latest and greatest because they're a part of this lifelong community.
And is it just Twitter, or do you use other social media platforms?
We use Twitter, Facebook, I would say, are the two core platforms, and then the individual blogs and other places where teachers have their work.
The other side of using social media with students of any kind in at university is that when they're on their mobile phones or their cell phones, we don't know if they're actually using that to engage with the course, or if they're using that to plan their social life and to do what, you know, all these other things that people do with their phones. How do you deal with that, or has that been a problem for you?
It hasn't been a problem with us because all of our coursework is very intensely project-based. So there's not lecture, there's not that time to sort of zone out and maybe be on another page. But speaking from my own experience as a student, I was always the one on my laptop. But if a professor would mention a reference, I would make sure and download that article and gather that in. And I think it's really the students and the teachers' responsibility just to behave, for lack of a better word, in there. But I know that that is a problem that others do face, but really with the project-based nature of our work, it's really hard for that to happen because there's so much work to be done collectively.
So what kind of projects do they work on?
In our online courses, one of our courses is centered around maker education, and they have to choose one of the maker kits that are available for educators, whether it be Little Bits or Raspberry Pi, sort of a range of technologies that they can choose from. And they go through the process of how would they use that in their classroom. So they're learning the technology and blogging and talking about how they're learning it and actually spending the time doing it. And then they're creating a lesson around that to engage their students. And then they're testing that lesson and then sharing what they've learned.
And this is all during class time?
This is all, well, it's online, so it's done on their own time. Yeah.
So how do you think technology will change the work of a university, or maybe how students learn in a university, say, in the coming decade?
I never like to answer future questions. I'm really bad at that one. But I do think that there is so much power in the social piece of learning, and that technologies will enable those connections and will enable a level of modification, is not the right word, but a way for students to find things that are of specific interest or need to them. If they need help just in time on the spot, they'll know that via a technology that help can come to them. If they're not able, say, to get to a math help room right away, but they'll be able to find a way to get help with that social technology piece. And I think the more open we are and the more that we share as researchers and educators, the more powerful that will be, because that collective base of knowledge is there for us to tap into.
And what are the implications of that then for university faculty?
Sure, there's a ton of that, and what's valued in terms of research and scholarship and publishing, right? There's this whole large problems that we're facing and looking into. But I think, and where I've seen some success in the power of sharing and connections, that you never know where those will lead, the sort of strength of weak connection or strength of weak ties theories there, that putting something out will come to fruition in a way that you could never determine or expect, whether it be connecting to a research or somewhere around the world, and a grant proposal comes out of that, and that's something that's valued out of that. Or you're connecting students to another group of students, and then you're building value that way. So I think that increasingly that those value systems will continue to be pushed at the university level as to what is valued, and hopefully that's something the Innovation Hub that we talked about can have some play in doing that too.
The reason we're talking, Lee, is because you're here in Ireland to be a keynote speaker at the SESI conference 2016. What is your talk going to be about?
I'm going to be talking about design thinking. So, and actually I'm not going to be talking about it. One of the things that I like to do in my keynotes are to have people engaged and active in what they do. So we're going to actually have an embodied experience in design thinking as much as we can in 20 minutes with, I think, 150 people. But not to toot my own horn, but we did, one of my last keynotes I did, we collectively authored a book in 30 minutes. So I've got a little bit of experience. The bar is set a little bit high, but we'll be experiencing some design thinking activities and then sort of taking a look at what design thinking is, and I'll give the attendees some tools that they can use to take away and do that in their own environments.
And what kind of software will you use for that?
We're going to be using Twitter and Today's Meet, which is a sort of a really easy online chat room where people can connect. You don't have to log in or anything. So
it's called Today's Meet.
Today's Meet. Yep.
Meet. Okay.
Yep.
And another thing you mentioned Little Bits. What is that?
Little Bits are essentially like electronic Legos. So they make circuits and you can connect different components. There's fans and power and light dimmers and all different sorts of gizmos that you can connect together to make things happen. So it helps students sort of understand the concepts of electricity, but also of invention as well.
When you're giving your keynote presentation tomorrow, what is your key message for Irish teachers?
That design thinking as a tool is something that's really useful when trying to tackle large challenges, large and small, quite honestly. So the talk is based around the digital learning strategy. There's a lot to deconstruct in that document. And how do you actually take a mandate and put that into practice? What does that really look like in a classroom? So I'm hoping that in the keynote, I'll be able to give some tools to help make that a little bit more manageable.
You also keep a blog. Mm-hmm. What is the basis for your blog, or what do you write about on it?
Well, I started my blog well over 10 years ago, and my own research, PhD research, is in the use of online and social media. And when I started out, was it about youth and blogging. And so I felt very strongly that if I were studying that, I also had to participate as well. So it started out just as using the medium, and it's become a place, a repository for ideas, for connecting both personally and professionally. So I don't sort of separate my two lives. You'll see posts about cooking and food on there, and then you'll also see recaps of the presentations or papers that I've written as well. So it's just sort of my digital presence.
And what's your own favorite piece of technology?
I guess probably my phone. I mean, I've always had my iPhone with me, and it's a pretty amazing tool. It's a video recorder, it's a camera, it's an audio device, and among everything else that it does. So I think that that's probably my indispensable technology tool.
And what's your favorite one to use in education then? Or is it the same?
It's the same, just because it's so diverse. You can do so many things and repurpose it in so many ways. Especially that since it has the camera and the video capability and the audio recording, using those tools in education is so powerful. So being able to dig in and use those is what I really like to share and do.
And where do you get ideas from yourself? Who inspires you?
It's all over the place. So I'm actually inspired a lot by food and cooking. So I get a lot of, as crazy as it sounds, some of my teaching and learning ideas. So I stole the idea of a quick fire challenge. There's a TV show called Top Chef in the States, and they do, and I think they do similar cooking shows like this in Ireland, where you're given a set of ingredients and a limited amount of time to do things. So I completely stole that idea for education and given people a limited set of technology tools and a task, like make a movie or a stop motion video, and you've got 20 minutes to do so and go.
And it sounds scary.
It's very scary, and it's something though that the first couple times people do it, they don't like it at all, because a lot of times you fail, you don't finish the task. But it really helps, even the like that jump over to failure is okay. And by the end of the program and the time, people are asking for more and wanting to come back for more quick fires, or doing them in their own classroom with kids, just because you see the value of that activity.
Have you thought at all about any downsides to technology in education, or do you see any downsides of using it in education?
Sure. I mean, there's tons and tons. I think one of the greatest concerns I have is how a lot of times we don't go beyond the surface. People will do a quick Google search, or take the first or second thing that they see, or they'll read something online and take it at face value and not go that extra step of digging in deeper and sort of having that digital literacy or media literacy around what they're finding online or what they're being told to implement in their classroom. So one of the things that we try really hard in our program, the master's program, to do is to teach that critical lens of going beyond even what I say. Just because I say something is good or a good way to do things, you should question that and do that very strategically and thoroughly. So if there's one thing that I see as a big concern, it's that critical literacy around information.
And finally, Lee, if there was one thing you wanted Irish teachers to remember after your visit, or to be talking about after your visit, what would it be?
Just to know that they're empowered to tackle big challenges, and that there's a support network around them. I know if people come tomorrow and don't know about the EdChat IE network, hopefully they'll walk away with that. The network here is absolutely tremendous. And having been to Ireland now, this is the fifth year that I've been working in the summers over here, just the support network of the teachers and the friends that I've made is absolutely incredible. And it's incredibly unique in what I've seen. And I've been around the world, and it's a very unique supportive network. So taking that away, and then knowing that there's me as a thread to the whole United States and to other places in the world, that our time doesn't end at CESE, that I'm a continual resource and connection to help them as they continue to innovate themselves.
And the work that Lee does in Ireland each summer is in Galway on a master's degree in educational technology, which can be achieved over 3 summers. You can find out more at edutech.msu.edu or on Twitter with the hashtag MAET. I'll put those links on the programme's website. Well, that brings this week's Inside Education to a close. You can listen to podcasts of previous Inside Education programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email me with comments and suggestions to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to my guest, Lee Graves-Wolfe, and to the chairperson and organising committee of CESE 2016 for their help in setting up the interview. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.